Joining us now on Animal Concerns of Texas is Lauren Ng. Thanks for being with us, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Lauren, can we start out by having you tell our listeners how you became vegan?
Yes, of course. I was in my second year of seminary, earning my Master's of Divinity degree at American Baptist Seminary of the West in Berkeley, California. And there was a visiting professor there teaching a winter term class. And I can't even remember what the name of the class was, but I do remember he was always snacking on vegetables, raw vegetables. And I, on the other hand, was snacking on Cheetos and usually washing that down with a soda. And so I was prompted to ask him what compelled him to eat so healthfully. And he told me he was a vegan. I had never heard that word before. I knew what a vegetarian was. I had no idea what a vegan was. I went home that day after class, Googled the word vegan, watched PETA's video, Meet Your Meat, and pretty much went through a transformation that day.
So there was no middle ground of vegetarianism? You went straight vegan?
No, I'm proud to call myself an extremist. So I pretty much just go for it. I say I went cold tofurkey.
Cold tofurkey, that's a good one. But that's really great to hear that your professor inspired you by just saying a word that you'd never heard before, and you took the initiative to go home and look it up. So that's an awesome story.
Absolutely. And what's interesting about it, too, is that it wasn't until many years later that I started making a connection between my veganism and my Christian faith. And so it's kind of serendipitous that it was a professor at seminary who was the one who turned me on to living a vegan lifestyle.
It must also be rather frustrating that there's so few Christians that think like we do.
Extremely frustrating, yes. And one of the things that I say to people all the time is that when I started to pursue kind of in a more formal way this intersection of food and faith, what prompted me to do that was realizing that when I was associating with my Christian colleagues in the ministry, they'd often say, "Wow, I've never met a vegan Christian." And then when I was hanging out with my animal rights friends, they'd say, "I've never met a Christian vegan." And so I thought there was some kind of connection and bridge to be built there.
It seems such a logical progression, but I guess, you know, so many people are in denial about what we do to animals.
That's absolutely true. I mean, I think, you know, you're all aware that a lot of it is an education piece. And to me, it was a Damascus Road experience. You know, for those who may not be familiar with that story in the New Testament of Paul, who was once, you know, somebody who was a persecutor of Christians, who had a transformational experience on the road to Damascus, and where the scales literally fell off his eyes, and he went on to become, you know, one of the biggest figures of the Christian faith. And so it was transformative for me, too. When I watched that video, Meet Your Meat, it felt like scales were falling off my eyes, and I could no longer ignore or deny that harsh and violent reality.
How do you try to get your message across to other Christians?
I do that in a lot of subtle ways through my actions. And, you know, one of the great things about being a vegan, as you all know, is that it really can't be hidden. So, you know, it's at least three times a day it becomes very evident that you're a vegan. And so when I'm at ministry events, at conferences, board meetings, things like that, it usually happens because the hotel or whatever brings me a vegan meal. And as everyone else is sitting around eating their kind of typical hotel meal of chicken and mashed potatoes and cheesecake afterward, you know, I'm getting all kinds of different food. And so that precipitates the conversation. People always ask me, "So what is a vegan and why do you eat vegan?" That's always tricky when they ask you that question as they're, food, yeah, you know, putting a fork full of chicken into their mouth,
right.
Because you don't want them to feel judged in a way that, or persecuted in a way that's going to close their minds and their ears to what you have to say.
Yeah.
So it's become tricky, and I've worked on kind of refining my message each and every time.
Right. Does it come up in sermons?
It does. And sometimes, you know, I'm asked to do speaking engagements and things like that, and sometimes I'm asked to preach on a variety of other things, but I've been, as of late, invited a few times to present papers or preach sermons about the issue of environmental ethics, animal rights, and so forth. So I think that the church is changing, and particularly in my denomination, American Baptist churches, there's become a new openness to pursuing those kinds of fields and of thoughts.
Wow.
And so certainly I've been asked to do such, yeah.
I thought Baptists would be last to go vegan. I was involved.
there's still time for that to be a possibility, but we're working on it.
I was involved with the local Unitarian community for several years. They made me an undeacon. That's because the minister was also president of Unitarian Universalist for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, a national organization. But after she went to Florida for a different community, I sort of lost touch with the local Unitarians. They, mm-hmm. you know, even though one of their main tenets is respect for the web of life, there weren't many vegans in that congregation.
Right. You know, and I think one of the things we can try to do is to find what are the natural entry points for this kind of conversation. So, for instance, there's a lot of Protestant churches that will do a blessing of the animals in the spirit of, you know, St. Francis. And so they'll invite people in the community or in the church to come with their dogs and their cats and other household pets and bless those animals. And that's a great entry point to say that God has called us to compassion for all of creation, and why show compassion to some animals and not to others. And Baptists are known for our potlucks. You mentioned you may have read one of my articles on our hen house, and that was called A Church Potluck Reimagined.
Uh-huh. Right.
So I find that most church potlucks, sometimes when you're just walking down that assembly line of all the non-vegan food, is a great time to just present something that I've made. You know, I mean, you know that I have a blog, a recipe blog that's vegan. And so I oftentimes am slaving away in the kitchen just to bring some of my vegan food for my Christian friends to experience, because it's music to my ears when they say, oh my gosh, this is vegan. It doesn't taste like cardboard. And that opens up a room for conversation as well.
I just discovered your recipe blog, and I'm going to have to go back there. It looks like there's just a ton of recipes there.
Thank you. Yeah, there was. There. When I first started it the first year in 2012, I actually, for the entire first summer, posted a recipe per day.
Whoa. Oh, that was pretty good.
And that was that was a personal goal, and I'm glad to say that I did it, and I probably will never do that again. But there's a treasure trove of recipes for sure.
You know, a lot of times in society, people perceive vegans as being like either hippies or punk rockers or, you know, liberal Democrats. And really, when you think about it, veganism is really a form of self-discipline. And it seems to be more aligned with traditional religious thoughts and practices. Do you ever run up against things like that?
Sure. I mean, it's interesting you mentioned that, and I just talked about natural entry points. You know, a time that I see a lot of my omnivorous Christian colleagues and friends pursuing or trying out veganism is during the season of Lent. You know, a lot of people will give something up, and that's also an idea that I try to put forward to people and say, hey, here's an opportunity for you to engage in this as a spiritual discipline, to not only reflect on your personal relationship with Christ, but to think larger, you know, to enlarge your circle of compassion, to include animals through your daily choices. And I always tell people that it's very empowering to realize, you know, that we live in a broken world, obviously. And God calls us to continue to pursue justice and mercy in a variety of ways. And it's very empowering for me to know that at least 3 times a day, and I like to snack, so probably more like 6 times a day, I am making a conscious decision for the betterment of God's kingdom. And it's something that once you get used to doing, you know, you get health out of it and a sense of joy out of it, but I'm also changing the world for animals. I find that to be an empowering message that seems to appeal to Christians. But absolutely, as a spiritual discipline, it's something that obviously I don't think I could ever change now. I mean, once, like I said, the scales have fallen off my eyes. There's no way those scales are gonna get themselves back on. But it's a very powerful way to reflect on how God calls us to live every day. And I tell people that, you know, when we look at the kingdom of God to come that will be on this earth, we try to live into the kingdom here and now. I mean, the reason why we don't commit murder is because there will not be murder when God's kingdom comes on earth. The reason we don't want to covet other people's belongings is because that's not going to be part of the kingdom to come. And so for me, this is my way of living into the kingdom to come, because we know from the prophet of Isaiah in the peaceable kingdom that there will be no hurting or destroying on God's holy mountain when the kingdom comes.
You know, that makes me think of something more simplified, but my son was talking about veganism and vegetarianism. He's only 8, and he I thought he said something somewhat profound, and he said that I don't think there's factory farming in heaven,
right.
You know, which gave me the idea that maybe if it's not going to be okay in heaven, then why is this okay on earth?
Absolutely.
One of the things I'm excited about is with Pope Francis and his dedication to poverty is that more and more Christians are going to be awakened to the idea of how our current food system contributes to world hunger and how we're not using our resources in a way, you know, we have 1.5 times the amount of food that we need to feed the 7 billion people on this earth right now. And yet we're using so many of these resources just to feed farmed animals so that we can make smaller and smaller portions of food for humans. Have you had a positive response to sort of that argument from other folks of faith?
I'd like to say that I have, but the answer is no. It's interesting, you know, when you think about applying evangelical strategies or strategic tools to veganism in an effort to convert others to veganism, there's a lot of different roads that you can pursue. That being one of them, the issues of global poverty and hunger. There's even human rights as another road to pursue, as far as, you know, how factory farm workers are treated and so forth. There's health, obviously. There's the environment, and there's animal cruelty. And then the one that I would think would be the least motivating but tends to be is just the fact that vegan food can taste really darn good. It seems so remedial. It seems so silly. But when I'm speaking with either my Christian friends or my non-Christian friends, you know, words can oftentimes just hit a brick wall. But the taste buds just open up so much opportunity.
Yeah, and it becomes that sharing a vegan meal with others is one of the best forms of advocacy I've found.
I find that to be true as well. And, you know, one of the other articles that I've written for our hen house was talking, it's called Eating Our Way to Heaven, Food as Sacrament. And my argument there is that every time, you know, the church recognizes a few different sacraments within American Baptist churches. We recognize the Lord's Supper, otherwise known as communion, and baptism as sacramental. My argument in that article is that there are all kinds of moments in life that can be deemed sacramental as a time when sort of, you know, God reaches through that thin veil to touch us here in our earthly lives, and that the act of eating can be deemed sacramental, whether that's a drive-through binge or a meal, a lovely meal that you've set forth for your family and friends. And if we are to see eating any meal as sacramental, I mean, you think about the miracles of what it took for that food to grow from seed, to be brought through that entire process, to be there in front of you as a gift from God. If we can see eating as sacramental, then how does that inform what we decide to put into our mouths? And so it seems very simple that we would be able to advocate for animals and convert people to veganism through the taste buds, but there is a lot more meaning built into that as well.
So many people see veganism as a diet of deprivation, and I've found that that's completely false. Most of the vegans I know have a much more interesting diet than standard American diet.
Yeah, I think that's true. You may have all had the same experience of having to reimagine or reorient your plate, your dinner plate, after you went vegan. And so, you know, for me growing up, my favorite meal was a steak, mashed potatoes, and vegetables. My mom would make that for me for my birthday every year. And so I grew up thinking, okay, you know, your plate was divided into three sections, your veggie, your starch, and your meat. And so when I went vegan, I thought, well, how do I do that? And not just eat the same tofu every day. And then I started to realize, well, that doesn't need to be the only paradigm for my dinner plate. Why does it have to be divided into those three sections? And once I threw that out, and it took me a while to get there, my meals became much more creative and inventive, and as did my taste buds for sure. My three children are 10, 8, and 5. I have two girls and a little boy at the end. And all three of them have made a conscious decision to be vegan at this point.
Oh, yeah?
So I'm incredibly proud. Yeah, it's wonderful. And my three kids, I'm just going to brag here, they are the least picky eaters you'll ever meet. I mean, and it seems silly to say that because they're vegan, but as long as it's not coming from an animal, these kids can down amazing things that other kids would just hold their nose at. So absolutely, it's expanded my taste buds and my horizons, and it's done so for my family as well. we don't suffer. I mean, I love, you see from my blog, I love to bake, and I try to go the healthy route a lot of times and not use, you know, refined sugar and things like that. But I won't lie, we eat a lot of decadent food.
Yeah, and I saw plenty of desserts on your recipe blog.
Yeah.
Earlier this week, I was giving presentations at a local high school about vegan nutrition. And for those people who are still used to, you know, when we were growing up, it was the food pyramid and how you were supposed to eat. And now, you know, it's this, it's a picture of a plate and it's divided into, you know, four sections. And you have your fruits and veggies and your whole grains and your protein and then, you know, a glass of dairy in the upper right-hand corner. But, you know, for those of us that still think in those terms of how we eat, it's still really simple because the plate is the same for a vegan. It's still fruits and vegetables, and it has whole grains in another section, and then there's still a protein section. So you can meet that protein section through, you know, beans, legumes, you know, other types of food that don't involve animal cruelty. And then, you know, instead of the calcium, the dairy, you know, you have some other calcium, you have soy milk, or you have some other option to drink to get you all that you need. And so I think for us, it's challenging. We're thinking about how hard it is to convert, but our plates are generally vegan friendly to begin with. You just kind of have to swap out one or two things and you know, you can still live a happy and healthy life.
And that's right. And then, and there's lots of education to be done. As you know, there's that great protein myth.
Yeah.
You know, it's on vegan shirts all over the place at this point, right? Where do you get your protein? I'm not saying protein is not important, but most people, when I tell them that you can find protein in dark leafy greens, they're shocked.
Yeah.
They have no idea.
And most people eat three times the amount of protein that they really need.
And, of course, excess protein is very hard on your body in a lot of ways, too, because of all the nitrogen it contains.
Heart and your liver and all those sorts of things suffer. And I was talking about this in the classes this week, is how some of the biggest animals in the world, that you know, or strongest animals, if you look at a horse or an elephant, they're not downing, you know, cheeseburgers to get that big. It's
Or tofurkey.
Right.
I mean, some of them eat just plants.
And I've even seen a transition for myself and my family. You know, when we first became vegan and we relied heavily on a lot of the processed foods. I mean, I always tell people I didn't give up meat because I didn't like the taste.
Right.
And so there was a period of transition for me where I said, gosh, I still want chicken nuggets. I still want a burger. I still want a, you know, turkey style roast. And so we ate a lot of those kinds of products, and they weren't even as good 13 years ago. So, you know, we ate a lot of those products at first, and I won't lie, we still do. Gardein is one of our favorites.
Oh, yeah.
And so we still are eating things like that at times, but I definitely moved to a more whole food, you know, plant-based diet at this point. But I think it's a great, those are great products for someone who's first making that transition.
At your potlucks, have you seen any transition to more and more people bringing vegan items? Or how is that, how do you judge your effectiveness on that outreach?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's definitely that awareness that just gets raised. And a lot of times I feel bad a little bit because I feel like I might be putting people out. Because we'll get to a potluck and people will say, well, I didn't think there'd be anything else for you, so I wanted to make something vegan. And I just graciously smile and say, thank you so much. You didn't have to do that, but I so appreciate it. How was that experience for you? And they'll say, you know, it's easier than I thought. I didn't have to go get eggs. I just used flaxseed or what have you. And then they're so proud of themselves that they tell other people, hey, look, I made something vegan for Lauren, but there's plenty for you to try as well. And sooner or later, you know, everyone is talking about how this great vegan dish has just surprised all of them. So I guess I pride myself on putting people out. and as a result, they come up with some great things, and it's getting more and more popular each and every time. So
that's great. Lauren, can you tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about your vegan recipe blog and your other work?
Absolutely. So for my articles, you can go to ourhenhouse.org. That's O-U-R-H-E-N-H-O-U-S-E. .org, and you can just search for Lauren Lisa Ng and find my two articles there, as well as a couple of book reviews. And then for my recipe blog, you can go to onehappytable.com. That's onehappytable.com.
We've been talking with Reverend Lauren Ng. Thanks for being with us, Lauren.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.